Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Flowing Zen, Finding True Healing with Qigong, by Anthony Korahias. Narrated by Anthony Korahias. Forward by Eric B. Robbins, M.D. Eric, you are getting by on 3%. These words came from Dr. C., a prominent bioenergetics psychologist. I went to see him in 1997, having completely collapsed after 20 years of severe chronic fatigue syndrome and brain fog. I felt stuck in every single area of my life. Bioenergetics is the study of the interface between emotions and energy in the body, and in this way, Dr. C. was uniquely qualified to make that assessment. In other words, 97% of my life force was being bound up in my musculature, physiology, and energetic pathways, and it wasn't readily available in any way that would provide an optimal quality of life. After getting little relief by following the suggestions of my physician, I started to look outside the box for answers. At one point early on, I studied with a renowned energy teacher. He was very well-intentioned, kind, and powerful, but his techniques forced open too many energetic pathways too quickly, which worsened my physical condition and caused emotional and mental upheaval. Thus began a decades-long exploration to understand and remedy those factors that were making me sick, including the study of hypnosis, energy healing, neuro-linguistic programming, NLP, meridian tapping, sitting meditation, binaural beat technology, somatic psychology, and tension and trauma-releasing exercises, TRE. Along the way, I was able to achieve substantial healing in terms of energy levels, cognitive function, emotional landscape, and my ability to enjoy life. Motivated and inspired by my success, I began accepting referrals involving chronic pelvic pain and functional illnesses. All of this was covered by my healthcare organization. Many of the patients had already been through the gamut of treatments offered by conventional allopathic medicine, but were still sick and suffering. Often, patients like this require a different healing model, ideally one that activates their own innate healing resources. Treating these types of patients requires one to make some distinctions about health and healing, which are pertinent to the book you are currently listening to. The first is that when we experience events in our lives that are stressful, terrifying, or too overwhelming to deal with at the time, we will lock these memories and emotions into our muscles and fascia. This happens automatically as a protective mechanism in order to keep these memories and emotions from coming up to conscious awareness and causing us terrible pain and anxiety. Wilhelm Reich referred to this as muscular armoring. And it is one major way that memories are repressed. The process uses up a tremendous amount of our bandwidth, even though we may not be aware of it. The second distinction is that chronically constricted and armored myofascia causes blockage of energy pathways and meridians in the body and can leave us exhausted and depleted. Third, serious stressors, particularly those that occur in early childhood, can substantially disrupt our physiology for years or decades. As a result of stressful life events, we can essentially be put into a chronic fight-flight-freeze stress physiology that either stays on autopilot or is easily triggered. And even though we say in common parlance, the body tends to heal itself, it doesn't heal particularly well when locked in a chronic stress state. In fact, over 80% of patients who go to a primary care physician have some sort of functional disorder. These are medical conditions in which symptoms are caused by impaired functioning of bodily processes, but where nothing obvious or pathologic is picked up on physical examination, labs, or x-rays. Examples of this include hypertension, fatigue, irritable bowel syndrome, headaches, asthma, insomnia, overactive bladder, and many cases of chronic pain. In my experience, most functional disorders occur in folks whose physiology is out of whack due to these factors. With all of this as a backdrop, a few years ago, I was doing an internet search and came across a blog post entitled "The Real Truth About the Small Universe Qigong," written by Sifu Anthony Korahias. It was one of the most brilliant things I had ever read because it explained what had been going on with me for decades. No one else had been able to fully explain this to me. Here was someone who understood the intricate interplay of energy and emotion, not just intellectually, but at a rare experiential level. I was intrigued enough to read more of his blogs and eventually signed up to participate in several of his online classes, including a couple of year-long courses. Sifu Anthony is a man of integrity, intelligence, clarity, and love. He cares deeply for his students and their well-being. He has a wealth of knowledge and experience, having taught Qigong to thousands of students since 2005. When you look at him, you can appreciate an unmistakable light in his eyes and a healthy glow from his body, demonstrating that he is an embodiment of that which he teaches. This book starts with an intimate memoir of Sifu Anthony's struggles with depression and back pain and his search for healing that was eventually achieved with Qigong. The writing throughout is superb, with a touch of satire and homage to his Ivy League pedigree. He gives a captivating overview of the history of Qigong to put things into context and also provides a solid yet simplified understanding of classical Chinese medicine with regard to how it relates to Qigong. Sifu Anthony understands healing at profound depths and is able to integrate and synthesize information across multiple fields of study in this book. He understands suffering from the perspective of one who struggled with it, physically and emotionally, for years, and this makes him exceptionally compassionate. He explains energetic and kundalini deviations and how to address them. He grasps the role of constricted myofascia and stress physiology in blocking energy flow, impeding bodily function, and impairing healing. And he explains how Qigong can address all of these facets. He is eminently capable of sifting through the Qigong knowledge base in order to show students what things are truly important in advancing their practice. He does this by examining ancient secrets through the lens of modern scientific advances and then tosses unnecessary dogma and doctrine out the window. The teaching stories and information in this book, if taken to heart, are priceless and can save you years or decades of work. You will have access to some bonuses that include several Qigong exercises and guided meditations. These meditations, according to many of his students, contain a transformative vibrational quality that simply must be experienced. Qigong is a powerful modality that empowers people and gives them hope. Through its regular practice, it shifts both your body and mind to a state where they can begin to heal. For this reason, Qigong is one of those things I'd encourage you to be doing to either prevent the need for doctor's visits or to require far fewer of them. Godspeed. Eric B. Robbins, MD, urologist and chronic pelvic pain specialist, co-author, Your Hands Can Heal You and the Power of Prana. Introduction. I never set out to become an expert in an ancient Chinese self-healing art. I was young and fit when I discovered Qigong, but I was also drowning in pain and suffering. Back then, my only goal was to heal myself. Qigong was simply a lifeline, a way for me to keep my head above water. We all want to heal. Almost everyone today is dealing with some sort of pain. That pain might be physical, like chronic low back pain, or it might be mental-emotional pain, like depression or anxiety. Either way, it's a form of suffering. In my case, I had both kinds of pain, physical and emotional. I had severe low back pain, and I also had severe depression. I was suffering, and I was desperate for a way out. In the West, we like to separate the mind from the body. We like to distinguish physical pain from other forms of pain. We like to put things in neat little boxes. On the other hand, Eastern thought doesn't separate mind and body into tidy categories. It mixes and swirls the two, like pouring milk into black coffee. Mind and body are unified and inseparable. There are no neat little boxes. I fell in love with Qigong because it promised a comprehensive solution to my suffering, whether it was physical or mental. And Qigong delivered on that promise. In fact, it did more than just help me to relieve back pain and depression. It brought healing on levels I didn't even know existed. Of course, Qigong is not the only solution to suffering. Many wonderful healing arts are out there. Maybe you've tried a few. If so, I hope they brought you some relief. However, there's a reason why you're listening to this book. If you're like me, then you want to take charge of your own healing destiny. Healing modalities like acupuncture and chiropractic are wonderful, but they still leave you in someone else's hands. When it comes to healing yourself, Qigong is hard to beat, and that's precisely why we are drawn to it. For me and so many of my students, finding Qigong was like coming home. I feel like I was born to practice this art, not because I have some innate talent for it, I don't, but because the shoe just fits. Maybe the Qigong shoe will fit you too. Maybe you'll also feel like you're coming home. This book is my sincere attempt to help you fall in love with this art the way that I and many of my students have. Or maybe you've been practicing Qigong for years. That's wonderful. In that case, my goal is to help you fall in love all over again, and perhaps deeper than you ever thought possible. This book is half memoir and half manifesto. First, I share my healing story so that you can understand Qigong through my eyes. I want you to understand how much Qigong healed me and also thousands of my students. That's why I've written much of this book as a memoir. You also need to know the nitty-gritty secrets to healing with Qigong. That's why some of this book is written as a manifesto. Whether you are new to Qigong or you already have bunches of experience, this book will reveal what really matters when it comes to self-healing. Are you ready to fall in love with Qigong? What this book is not. I want to be clear, right from the beginning, what this book is not. When I was buying Qigong books by the bushel back in the 1990s, the internet was still in its infancy. Back then, Qigong books had lots of pictures and drawings because that's what people wanted. After all, you couldn't just Google Qigong or go on YouTube. Fun facts, Google was created in 1998 and YouTube was created in 2005. I still have a Qigong book with tiny images in the lower right corner. The idea is to flip the pages with your thumb and watch the images move like an old motion picture. Today, there are better ways to teach Qigong. The internet has matured and online learning is taking the world by storm. I began teaching online in 2013. By 2016, I saw the writing on the wall and closed my brick-and-mortar Qigong studio. I now teach 95% online, though I still do an annual Qigong retreat in the mountains of Costa Rica. Instead of having hundreds of students in a small college town in Florida, I now have thousands of online students from 48 different countries. I will refer you to my website where you can learn lots of Qigong, totally for free. Throughout this book, I will encourage you to stop listening for a moment, go to the website, and grab your free book bonuses. This is a big improvement over asking you to flip images with your thumb. Qigong can change your life, but only if you act. Even if there were lots of pictures in the print and ebook versions of this book, you would still need to get up and do the exercises. If you're going to get up, then you might as well go to my website where you can learn from the videos. While you're there, you can also take advantage of some guided meditations, which people absolutely love. You will need to enter your email address so that I can send you the videos and other bonuses. If you like, I'll also send you my newest blog posts, a monthly newsletter with the latest Qigong news, including the latest research, as well as information about my paid programs. All of this is free. We have a vibrant online community, and I hope you'll join us. If you want a book with endless pictures of various Qigong postures, then this ain't it. But if you want to really get your healing juices flowing, if you want to know what truly matters in Qigong, or if you've tried Qigong before but didn't get the results you desired, then this book is for you. Obviously, this book is also for you if you are one of the 20,000 plus people who have learned from me online. Hi, everyone. Chapter 1. Saving Lives, Starting with My Own. People say that my enthusiasm for Qigong is contagious. I love this compliment, and I also love infecting people with a passion for Qigong. I hope that you catch it as you listen to this book. But my enthusiasm for Qigong is not all rainbows and unicorns. My passion comes from deep suffering and struggle. Before we dive into the practice and philosophy of Qigong, I'd like to tell you about how Qigong saved my life. I want to tell you this story because you need to know that everything I do, my writing, teaching, and daily Qigong practice, is my way of showing gratitude for the art that was my salvation. If you're going to learn from me, whether it's from a book, at a retreat, or online, then you need to understand where I'm coming from. You also need to know right from the beginning that I'm not some guru on a mountaintop. I'm perfectly human, not perfectly enlightened. And this is critical for you to understand, not only because it will help you to avoid the pitfalls of the guru trap, but also because it will show you that anyone can achieve remarkable results with Qigong. If I can do it, then you can too. Here's how my journey began. From Ivy League to utter darkness. I was a sophomore at Columbia University when I began my descent into darkness. On paper, I was living the dream. I was attending an Ivy League college, I was on the dean's list, and my future was bright. I mentioned Columbia here for a reason, and it's not to brag. Okay, maybe I'm also a teensy bit proud of my alma mater, but as you'll learn in a moment, Columbia plays an important role in the story. I'm working up the courage to tell you the intimate details about my life-or-death battle against a terrible illness. But before I do that, before I share these deep and personal details, I'd like you to understand something. If I don't set the record straight right from the beginning, I'm afraid you'll get the wrong message from this book. Maybe you already know my story. Maybe you know that the illness I battled was called major depressive disorder, MDD, also known simply as depression. But did you know that many people still believe that clinical depression is a character flaw rather than an illness? And you know what? I believed the same thing for years. I thought I really was weak. It's bad enough to suffer from a devastating, life-threatening illness. It's worse when friends and family think you're just a weakling. And it's worse still when you start to believe them. That's how depression works. It tunnels into your mind like a termite and then weakens your foundation. I want you to know that before the darkness of MDD engulfed me, I was a talented young man with a bright future. I want you to know that I worked my ass off to get accepted into Columbia. In high school, I studied hard, played soccer and tennis, was an editor for the school newspaper, took AP classes, and even played violin in the Kennedy Center with the All-National Orchestra. I want you to know this now, right at the beginning of our journey together. I am not weak. Remember this as you listen to my story. Depression kills. Qigong saves. Let's jump ahead in time for a minute. Once, early in my career as a Qigong teacher, I was at a local health fair in a small college town in Florida. I was in my 30s, and I was excited to be sharing the art that had transformed my life in so many ways. At my little booth, I was chatting with a woman who was in her 50s. We'll call her Ruth. I was telling Ruth how Qigong had saved my life. "Was it cancer?" she interrupted. "No," I said. "My battle was with major depressive disorder," and she rolled her eyes and then interrupted again. "Oh, I thought it was something serious." Then she put down my brochure and walked away. Ouch. This woman literally rolled her eyes at my illness. Luckily, I was used to it by then. Depressives deal with this stuff all the time, so it didn't really faze me. Over the years, I've learned to just smile at comments like these. As a wise man once said, "Forgive them, for they know not what they do." I wasn't angry at Ruth because I recognized that her statement came from ignorance and misunderstanding. Unfortunately, when it comes to MDD, there's a lot of that going around. Here's the first thing that you need to know about MDD. It kills. MDD is a specific type of depression. It's also called major depression, clinical depression, unipolar depression, or most commonly just depression. Suicide is a top 10 killer in the U.S., and 60% of those deaths are related to depression. In other words, depression kills more Americans every year than AIDS or leukemia. And this is not just limited to the United States. The World Health Organization, WHO, says that more than 264 million people are battling depression worldwide, contributing greatly to the global burden of disease. Some of you may be surprised by these stats. You don't hear much about depression being a fatal disease, and this is part of the problem. When someone dies from depression, we just call it suicide. But that ignores the actual underlying illness that led to their death. The result of this is a profound lack of empathy for depressives. Ruth, the woman who rolled her eyes, is just one of millions who think this way. We don't treat other illnesses like this. For example, we automatically give empathy to someone battling cancer. We bring her casseroles, hold her hand, and listen to her with empathy and care. But with depression, it's the opposite. There are no casseroles. There is little to no empathy. If anything, people say terrible things to depressives. Here are some of the things that people have said over the years. "Pull yourself together." "You just need a good kick in the ass." "It's all in your head. Think positive thoughts." "Grow up and stop feeling sorry for yourself." "You've got so many things to be thankful for." "Take insert holistic remedy. That's what I always do when I'm sad." If you've battled depression before, then these statements will be familiar to you. "I know you've heard terrible things too. I'm sorry that happened to you." But why is this problem so pervasive? If you said any of those statements to someone battling cancer, we would call you a heartless monster. Cancer is all in the head? What the hell? Screw you. Let me be clear. I'm not saying that MDD is the same as cancer, because it's not. I am, however, saying that the way we treat depressives is awful. if we understood this fact, and if we changed how we treated them, then we could save thousands, perhaps even millions of lives. And by the way, asking people to be more empathetic towards depressives doesn't mean we need to be less empathetic towards cancer survivors or folks with other painful or debilitating illnesses. Empathy is not a zero-sum game. Here's one final statistic before I go on with my story. Depression is the second leading cause of death for 15 to 29-year-olds. The first leading cause of death is motor vehicle accidents. In other words, depression is the leading medical cause of death for 15 to 29-year-olds. I was 22 when I graduated from Columbia. In other words, I was right in the danger zone. Other than a motor vehicle accident, depression was statistically the most likely way for me to die young. I didn't know this at the time, of course. I thought everyone had suicidal thoughts and that it was normal to think about filling your backpack with dumbbell plates and then jumping off the George Washington Bridge. I thought everyone my age Googled, actually, it was Alta Vista back then, the correct way to slit your wrists with a razor blade. It's also worth mentioning that the rate of suicide at Ivy League universities is significantly higher than normal. For example, at Harvard, the incidence is twice the national rate. And at Princeton, 35% of students say that they have developed a mental health issue while there. This makes sense because the pressure at Columbia was intense. Here's the point. It's not melodramatic to say that Qigong saved my life. I was truly in mortal danger in my 20s. I was at a college that had statistically higher rates of suicide, and I was battling an illness that kills more 20-somethings than anything else. It was only years later that I recognized the real danger I was in. I was metaphorically walking along the edge of a cliff in utter darkness, and I easily could have fallen. And if I'm being brutally honest, I think I would have fallen, if not for Qigong. More than depression. So far, we've talked in depth about depression, but that's not what this book is really about. If you don't relate to depression, that's okay. In the end, we're really talking about the art of self-healing. I'm forever grateful for how Qigong helped me with depression. Not only that, it also helped me overcome chronic fatigue, anxiety, a weak immune system, a congenital heart murmur, and severe low back pain. And that's just my own personal success with Qigong. My students have seen benefits with an amazing variety of stubborn health problems, digestive disorders, autoimmune issues, fibromyalgia, and multiple sclerosis, to just name a few. Sometimes Qigong helps with complex and confusing problems. For example, here's William's story. Success story. William. William is a veteran of Operation Iraqi Freedom, 2007 to 2008. He came to me because of issues related to toxic exposure from burn pits in Iraq. Using jet fuel, they would toss everything from generic trash to medical waste into the pits for burning. As a result of that exposure, William required 6 different biopsies and developed chronic obstructive pulmonary disease, COPD. On top of that, because of a long career as a cavalry scout hauling heavy rucksacks on difficult terrain all over the world, he developed significant bone spurs on both heels. In 2015 and 2017, William had surgeries to correct the bone spurs, a process that involved detaching his Achilles tendons, shaving down the heel bones, and then reattaching the tendons. The surgeries took a toll on William, and he couldn't bounce back quickly. As a result, he gained weight, developed sleep apnea, and had a list of several other health problems. William started learning from me in June 2020. Within 6 months, he saw tremendous progress. His range of motion in both Achilles tendons improved, and he can now go up and down stairs like he used to. He can also walk for extended periods and distances. As a result of increased mobility, William dropped 20.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?